This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hey there, cat lovers. Welcome to Nine Lives with Dr. Cat. I'm Dr. Catherine Krim, your host. I'm a veterinarian, animal advocate, and your inside scoop on all things feline. Today, we're diving into the world of cats just a little bit more wild. My guest is a passionate voice for wildcats, the treasurer and board member of Big Cat Rescue, Howard Baskin. We're going to dive into Howard's mission and learn more about him after a quick break, so we'll be right back.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations, too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Nine Lives with Dr. Cat on Pet Life Radio. Howard, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I am so happy that you were able to take some time to talk to me about the wilder side of the cat world.
Happy to do it.
I want to get started a little bit with something about you. What first drew you into the world of animal welfare and big cats? Were you always an animal person?
Well, I had always had dogs or cats in latter years, mostly cats, domestic cats, of course, but I was not involved in animal advocacy until I met Carol, and then she took me over to the sanctuary, and I made the mistake of saying, well, maybe I could help, and that led to the last 20-some-odd years of helping.
So Carol is your wife, so that makes perfect sense. That's an interesting way to get into it. I always find it interesting to see how people got their calling, because you know, I was kind of born knowing I wanted to be a veterinarian, but my son tells me that that's really strange. Most people have an evolution or a journey. So what is it about big cats in particular that have really captured your heart?
Well, you can't be around them, which we were for decades at the sanctuary, without falling in love with them. And when you hear the stories of how they are mistreated in captivity, I mean, if you care at all about animals, it's just painful to hear these stories. And we not only heard them, we lived them. We would have to go to these places and see these horrible conditions that we rescued cats from. So trying to put a stop to that became a very personal passion for me.
So for those of my listeners who don't know about it, what exactly is Big Cat Rescue and what has been its mission so far?
Well, there's been a huge change in the last couple of years. For decades, since the early 90s, Big Cat Rescue was a sanctuary that would take in, rescue these abused, abandoned big cats, orphaned big cats, and give them a permanent home, at the sanctuary. But we also were very active in what we referred to as advocacy in trying to put an end to the problem or end to the abuse. And so for the last decade or so, we worked very hard, put an enormous amount of effort and resources into leading the effort to get a federal bill passed, which is an incredibly hard thing to do. And the law now is called the Big Cat Public Safety Act. And it really eliminated, in our view, 90% of the mistreatment of big cats by doing two things. It ended the cub petting, where these operators like Joe Exotic or Doc Antle would constantly breed cubs in order to charge people to pet them and take photos with them. And you could only use the cubs for a couple months before they were big enough to take a kid's finger off. And then they would discard them if they lived. And then the second part of the problem is they would end up in people's backyards. People would see Siegfried and Roy with a tiger on their sofa and think, oh, I can do that. I want to do that. And, you know, that doesn't work out. And then the cats end up in these horrible tiny cages owned by people who don't know how to take care of them, not getting proper medical care because it's expensive. And so what the bill did was end the cub petting and phase out this private ownership by people who don't have a USDA license as exhibitors, you know, like a zoo or a sanctuary. And so once that happened, our population of cats had declined over the years. The cats tended to live longer at our sanctuary than most places, but, you know, eventually they pass away. And, you know, back in, let me say, 2010 even, if there was a tiger that needed to be rescued, the email would go out to the, you know, 8 or 10, you know, good big cat sanctuaries saying, does anybody have a space? Because everybody was full. But what's happened over time, as some of these cub petters have gone out of business and as we've been more successful with the advocacy, you know, gradually there was more and more space available. And so we put our energy into the federal bill and, you know, we're basically only rescuing cats if there wasn't another home for them. So our population declined. So the bill passed in December of 2022, became law. And we spent 2023 working with a wonderful sanctuary in Arkansas called Turpentine Creek to build cages. They had much more land than we did. We were now surrounded by development in our 60 plus acres. They have over 400 acres. And so we worked with them to fund building much larger enclosures for our cats there and moving the cats there. And they're very similar to us, both in philosophy and in, you know, veterinary care. And so we're thrilled with that. And then we spent 2024 selling the sanctuary property. And so now we have done something all these years that no other sanctuary had been doing, which was taking a part of our revenue, kind of like tithing, and using it to fund projects around the world that were designed to keep the wildcats from going extinct, with particular focus on the smaller wildcats that didn't get a lot of attention, didn't get a lot of funding, although we did work, you know, do some work with the larger big cats. But we had a limited budget for that because most of our resources were devoted to running the sanctuary. So now we've invested the proceeds of the sale and the earnings from that, along with donations, we will be able to do much more funding of these projects around the world. And there's just a huge need for that.
I am very excited because you sent me a link to your website and I saw the huge map of the world, basically, and all the little bullet points and pins dropped everywhere that you guys have made a difference. And I just love it. I mean, we couldn't go possibly through all of that right now, but that is just amazing. It's such a meaningful evolution for you, and you've made your work continue to ripple outward. So you've got some things on there about specific cats that are becoming extinct in other parts of the world. Can you give us any updates on that? Are things going well with your advocacy?
Yes, and there are some success stories, but there are other places. About half of the small cats, well, let me start with, there are 41 species of cat, and that changes over time as the scientists make decisions at the IUCN, what's called the IUCN, about what is a species. But of those 41, 7 that everybody knows about are generally considered the big cats, you know, lions, tigers, jaguars, clouded leopards, leopards. And then there are 2 cheetahs and cougars that make up the 7 that most people consider to be the big cats. And everybody knows about them. These are, you know, these are species that are called iconic and majestic, and they truly are. But there, what people don't realize is there are 34 species of smaller cat, you know, a few that people will have heard of, like a bobcat or ocelot, but many that, you know, I had certainly never heard of before I got involved here. And those cats in their environment play the same role as predators that the tigers and lions play in their environment, where they basically control the populations that are their prey and keep a balance in those ecosystems. And if those cats disappear, the whole ecosystem declines. And we've seen this, like there's an area in India where used to have cheetahs. And when the cheetahs became extinct there, the whole area, you know, changed and became wasteland. And we helped fund a project to reintroduce cheetahs in that area. So that was one of our bigger cat projects. So, you know, about half of these 34 species are either categorized as threatened or endangered. So, you know, there really is, and the nature of the threats, you know, there's a couple of particular kinds of threats. Do you want me to talk a little bit about that? I feel like I'm going on and not letting you ask your question.
Well, you know, I really do want my listeners to understand what the threats are, because a lot of it is people. I mean, all of it is really people, but there are different ways. Yeah, absolutely. Please go on.
Well, one of the areas of threat is what's referred to as human predator conflict. You know, if you're in South America, in these rural areas, you know, people are very poor. If they have a dozen chickens, well, to them, that is enormous. And if one of the small cats steals one of the chickens, well, that's like somebody coming to your house and stealing your car without insurance. And so reducing the amount of conflict and changing the attitudes and mentalities of the people to be supportive of the cats and having them understand the role they play in their environment there is critical. So how do we do that? One way is if we provide the materials, which these folks can't afford, they are handy. They can build what are called predator-proof chicken coops that the small cats can't get into. And at the same time, the folks around the world who do this work, and these are just incredibly dedicated people who mostly get no compensation at all, spend all of their free time, support themselves in other ways, and volunteer. And so they will educate them. And what they'll do is we'll build the coops and then put up cameras and show these farmers that the cat is still around, but it's not taking their chickens and they can live with it comfortably. And in some cases, in one case, one of our people reported they went back to check on things, and the farmers there had actually posted pictures on the wall of the cats because they were so proud that they were helping support them. Another way we do that is sometimes we can provide incentives to the people, financial incentives that help them avoid conflict with the cats. So, you know, among those things are like providing beehives and having them be honey producers. But, you know, they can't afford to buy those couple of beehives. But for, you know, modest amounts of money, we can do that. So, you know, those are some of the ways we reduce that. You know, we had kind of a fun story. We sent Jamie, Carol's daughter, and Victor, you know, to Mongolia to look at a project we were looking at funding with palace cats. And palace cats are just adorable and really unique, because in all the other species, when the mothers raise the young, at some point the young can take care of themselves and they go off and find their own territories. Well, the palace cats live in these little rock structures, and they find crevices and places in the rocks for their dens. And when the young are big enough to take care of themselves, the mothers leave and go find a new territory. Well, the problem is, if you do successfully increase the population, then they end up heading out into areas where they have to go long distances in open ground to find an area that has the kind of rock structures that they need. And when they do that, they're exposed to birds of prey and other predators. And so when Jamie was there, she talked to the people who were doing the work, and they said, well, look, you know, you got a whole bunch of rocks here. Could we build more of these structures that they now only find when they're natural? And they said, well, yeah, but, you know, the building X number of them would probably cost about $5,000 to, you know, get the pay people and get the equipment. But it would also have the benefit of any time we can provide income to the people in the town, that helps support their attitude to want to support the cats. So, you know, we funded the $5,000 and they built a bunch of these out of the rocks and then put up cameras and could film both the palace cats and others using the rocks. So, you know, that was a wonderfully successful and kind of unique example. The other issue, particularly in South America, is disease. In South America, there are an enormous number of what are called free-roaming domestic cats and dogs. And, you know, some of them may be pets. They may belong to someone. Others are feral, but they're all roaming free. And if they get the carnivore disease that's fatal, the domestic animals wander off. If they have contact with the wildcats catch it and die a horrible death of slowly wasting away, being unable to hunt, you know, starving to death. So by active spay, neuter, and vaccination programs, we can dramatically reduce the amount of these wildcats that catch this disease and die from it. So those are, you know, two of the examples of how we deal with, you know, the interaction between the local communities, or two of the major threats to many of these small cats.
Well, and now you're speaking my language, because I definitely believe in spaying and neutering feral populations of cats and dogs. So I love that. So I think that people see some of this stuff on social media and, of course, kind of like smut sells, and they want to assume that it's circuses and it's cub petting exclusively. But actually, I think what you're saying is some of the people are just trying to live. And it's just the confrontation between the people trying to live and the animals trying to live. And that's where you come in. Am I getting the idea correctly?
Well, exactly. And by the way, it's carnivore distemper disease. But yes, and you see this in India, you know, with the tigers, when people are gradually encroaching onto the territory as the population expands and have more conflict with the tigers. So tigers hunt at night and don't like light. So we have funded basically street lights along an area that will keep the tigers from, you know, coming in and attacking people. We had another situation in India where there's an area that used to have pretty good water holes and they were drying up, you know, maybe climate change. And that was causing the tigers to move closer and closer into the villages looking for water. So we worked there with a wonderful group called the Corbett Foundation, and we ended up funding. They designed basically a well. They, you know, pound a pipe into the ground and put up a pump and put up four solar panels to run the pump and recreate the water hole. And this would keep the tigers from encroaching on the people. But, you know, you can understand for these people that if they feel threatened, or if their livestock were threatened, you know, that is just a huge deal for them.
I think that we, in this country where we have so much, we kind of forget that. And we're really, really quick to judge those people. But I think you're right. That's an excellent point. What if it was your child that was in danger, you know? And so I think that these ripples that you're doing are the way to make a huge, huge difference. So I just really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about it. And I would love it if you could share with my listeners how to help. I mean, there are ways to find out more and to be a part of this amazing creative mission to reduce the confrontation between cats, wild cats, and humans. So how can they find you?
They can go to bigcatrescue.org. And of course, like any nonprofit, we would welcome donations. And, you know, because the investment, you know, sometimes people ask, well, how much of my donation goes to the, you know, directly to the animals versus to overhead? And, you know, any organization, in order to run properly, you have to have some overhead. But in our case, now the investment earnings, the interest off the proceeds from the sale of the property, more than cover our modest overhead. And so, you know, every penny that someone donates goes to support the cats. And occasionally we have a fundraising event where, you know, one of our donors will offer matching funds. Like right now we're approaching what's called Give Day in early May. And so we're just putting out our newsletter and we have $21,000 in matching funds. So if someone donates a dollar, it gets matched a dollar. So it doubles their impact. So, you know, that's the best way they can help with this kind of work. There's still work to be done, you know, domestically with abuse. You know, there are still some odds and ends of circuses. You see these little circuses that show up at state fairs. And so, you know, not attending those, complaining to the state fair and say, we don't want to see that. That's mistreating animals. And educating other people about that Or, you know, there are still roadside zoos where the conditions are, you know, horrible. And, you know, complaining about those places, reporting them to USDA if you see things that, you know, you don't think are proper, are ways people could help that cost them nothing.
There are also some things that I see as a small animal veterinarian with people breeding animals with wild cats and things. And that's another topic probably for another show. So I would love for you to come back and us to talk a little bit more, because there is so much to this. So thank you for being here. And thank you for dedicating your life to give these animals the dignity that they deserve. And also for helping the people, because helping the people and making it important to them that they need to get along with the animals and that we all need to live here together is kind of where it's at.
You're absolutely right. And that's become increasingly the philosophy of this work, is to help the people and the animals. They both benefit. And real quick, you're absolutely right. I should have mentioned that domestically, you know, not getting one of these small exotic cats as a pet, like a serval or these hybrids, is a way to help.
You know, and they may not make good pets, even if they've been crossed with domestic cats. I see a lot of surrender of these cats. That's probably a little bit of a controversial statement for me to make, but I see a lot of these cats surrendered because they don't really make great house pets in my experience.
Well, that's putting it very tactfully. They almost never make good pets, and people abandon them, and it's horrible for the animal and not a good experience for the people. And these savannah cats, which are a blend of a serval and a domestic cat, people get told, wild-looking cat with a domestic personality. Well, they breed them for 5 generations to get them close to having a domestic personality, and all those along the way get, you know, what happens to them? They're not pets, so where do they go? So anytime you see a savannah cat, you can be sure that dozens of cats died in order to make that one that's what's called an F5. But you have these breeders lying to people about it and showing video. You know, they show a video of a 2-year-old, but we would have people bring them to the sanctuary when they're young, like up to 2 years old, they're manageable. And this woman, I remember one who showed up with all these scars on her arm. She tried until the cat was 5 and finally gave up because they're wild animals.
I actually have seen them in my practice as well. I remember one fairly elderly lady that adopted one, and this kitten was hanging from her drapes and like tearing them from top to bottom. And I thought, oh, this is the worst match I've ever seen. And she ended up surrendering the kitten, and I do not know what happened to it. So that makes me really sad. So I feel like education and the things that you're doing and maybe the things that I'm doing can make a difference. I really hope so.
Well, thank you for what you're doing. It was a pleasure being on your show. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks again. And to everyone listening, remember, compassion and advocacy don't stop with our own pets. The choices we make and the causes we support can help make a difference and help make the world a better place for animals and for people. So thank you again, Howard, and thank you for all that you do. And thanks to my listeners. If you like this show, certainly listen, follow, share, and go check out bigcatrescue.org. And this has been another episode of 9 Lives with Dr. Cat. I'll see you next time. Go out and have a perfect day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.